Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners. So we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English. On today's program, Dan Friedel tells us about how to tell the difference between COVID-19, a cold, and influenza. John Russell presents this week's Everyday Grammar Report. We close with the next part of our history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, China announced new COVID-19 restrictions in a large city near Beijing, just weeks before the Winter Olympics are set to begin. Tianjin is about 140 kilometers from Beijing. About 14 million people live there. On Thursday, the Chinese government closed large roads and canceled train and bus trips from Tianjin to other cities because of a rise in COVID-19 cases. Anyone leaving the city had to show a negative virus test and have a good reason for leaving. Tianjin is one of six Chinese cities under restrictions. Observers are concerned because it is so close to Beijing, the host city of the 2022 Winter Olympics. The games begin on February 4th. About 20 million people living in China are under COVID-19 restrictions. Some people are not permitted to leave home. During the 2 years of the pandemic, China has acted quickly to put restrictions in place in an effort to limit the spread of the virus. China is still working to control the virus with a zero-tolerance policy. Other nations are moving toward trying to live with the virus. This is especially true as the Omicron variant seems to spread much more easily than earlier versions of the virus. Dali Yang is a Chinese politics expert at the University of Chicago in Illinois. He said China is at an important point in the pandemic. He said he wonders whether the country can prevent the spread of Omicron. More than 85% of China's population is vaccinated against COVID-19. On Thursday, China reported there were 124 new cases of COVID, including 41 in Tianjin. China says 4,636 of its citizens have died from COVID-19 during the pandemic. Many other countries have reported hundreds of thousands of deaths. Observers are worried that the upcoming Olympics may create a virus surge in China. Something similar happened in Japan during the Summer Olympics. Kinji Shibuya is a public health expert and a researcher at the Tokyo Foundation for Policy Research. He said the Delta variant spread in Tokyo over the summer. But restrictions helped stop a wider spread. The rules will be even more strict in China during its Olympics. China is creating a bubble that is meant to prevent contact between the outside world and athletes, media members, workers, and other visitors. Anyone who leaves the contained area will be required to stay away from others for 3 weeks. Kei Saito studies viruses at the University of Tokyo. He said the special rules during the Olympics should protect people within the bubble. However, he is not sure China will be able to control the spread of Omicron. It's almost impossible, he said. China continues its restrictions around the country. Large numbers of residents in Tianjin on Wednesday got their second COVID-19 test. They have been asked to wait at home until they get a negative result. Traffic coming into the city is limited to trucks delivering food or medical supplies. Even with the restrictions, Yu Xuan, a university worker, said everything is fine. Yu said food stores and restaurants are still open as usual. But in another city, Xi'an, some people say restrictions there have made it difficult to get food. People who are involved in putting on the Olympics still plan to go ahead with the games. Chinese President Xi Jinping visited the Olympic area last week. The world is turning its eyes to China, Xi said, and China is ready.
Medical experts say the only way to know for sure if you have the common cold, flu, or COVID-19 is to get a test, because symptoms can be similar. The flu and COVID-19 have common symptoms such as cough, fever, tiredness, and muscle soreness. The viruses can all spread before people know they are sick. Many people who have COVID-19 do not feel sick, but they can still spread the virus. The main difference with COVID-19 is people sometimes lose their ability to smell and taste. With flu, fevers are more common. With colds, people usually have throat pain or nasal congestion. The viruses are separate. It is, however, possible to become sick with more than one at the same time. Some people are calling the combination of flu and COVID-19 fluorona. Kristen Coleman is an assistant professor at the University of Maryland School of Public Health. She said the number of people with flu and COVID-19 will increase in the coming weeks and months as the Northern Hemisphere enters flu season. Testing is the best way to find out which virus you have. While tests are in short supply in some parts of the world, Coleman said the best way to find out is to visit a pharmacy where you can be tested for both flu and COVID-19 at the same time. As soon as you know which illness you have, doctors can help with treatment. Coleman said that in normal times, laboratories can find out if you have the common cold. However, right now, most are focused on testing for COVID-19. One way to reduce your chances of having a problem with flu and COVID is to get vaccinated, experts say. The U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention said it is safe to get the flu vaccine and a third COVID-19 shot or booster at the same time. I'm Dan Friedel.
Imagine you want to improve your reading skills in English. Perhaps you pick a book such as The Night Watchman, an award-winning book by Louise Erdrich. You read the following words.
Thomas Wojcik removed his thermos from his armpit and set it on the steel desk alongside his scuffed briefcase.
In today's Everyday Grammar, we will explore these words in some detail. You will learn how you can improve your reading skills by making inferences, conclusions or opinions that are based on facts or evidence. When you read in English, one way to improve your understanding is to ask yourself an important question. Who is doing what? This question gets to the heart of one of the most important structures of English grammar: subject, verb, object. Let's consider our example sentence.
Thomas Wojcik removed his thermos from his armpit and set it on the steel desk alongside his scuffed briefcase.
We can start by identifying the subject of the sentence, Thomas Wojcik. Then we can look to the next word, the verb removed. It is in the past tense. We know this because of the ed ending. We already have several important pieces of information. The writer is describing something that Thomas Wojcik did in the past. He was removing what exactly? Imagine you do not know what a thermos is, or an armpit for that matter. Do not be worried about the terms you do not know. Instead, look for words that you do know. Note the word his. This word shows possession. It comes before nouns. Therefore, you know that a thermos is a noun and an armpit is a noun. So far, the basic structure of the sentence is something like this.
Thomas removed his noun from his noun.
Let's continue with our example sentence. We arrive at the words and set it. The word and is a conjunction. The word set is another past tense verb. Because there is not a different subject stated, we can guess that Thomas Wojcik is doing another action. Once again, we have the word his, as in his scuffed briefcase. You know that a briefcase is likely to be a noun. The word scuffed is probably an adjective. We know this because adjectives often come before nouns and after words such as his. If we look at the entire sentence and look for words that mark nouns as well, we arrive at something like this.
Thomas Wojcik removed his noun from his noun and set it on the steel desk alongside his adjective noun.
Once you have identified the basic sentence structure, you have a few different ways you could continue reading. You could look up the unfamiliar words in the dictionary, but that process would make your reading very slow. You could also keep reading and try to understand the broader ideas and actions of the story without paying special attention to unusual words. Instead, you could use what you understand to try to reach a conclusion about what an unfamiliar word means. This is called making an inference. Here is an example. Imagine you continued reading the description about Thomas. Perhaps you read the following words, which do not actually appear in Erdrich's book.
Thomas opened the thermos and poured hot, steaming coffee into his cup.
When you read this sentence, you can make an inference about what a thermos is. It is an object that holds liquids and keeps them hot. When you become good at making inferences, your reading skills will improve, as will your enjoyment of reading. Grammar can help you make inferences. Look for the sentence's subject, verb, objects, and look for function words, words like his, her, their, the, a, an, this, those. These words give you clues about grammatical relationships and can tell you if an unfamiliar word is a noun or adjective. It will take effort to improve your reading skills, but taking the time to do so will help you read all kinds of wonderful books, news stories, and even social media posts. You will also have better results on difficult English reading tests. I'm John Russell.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. The United States did not play a very large part in world events during the 1800s. At the beginning of the 1900s, however, it expanded its interests throughout the world. America's president at that time strongly supported the expansion. He was Theodore Roosevelt, a distantly related cousin of the future president, Franklin Roosevelt. Shirley Griffith and Frank Oliver complete the story of America's 26th president, who was also known as Teddy.
Theodore Roosevelt became president in 1901, after the assassination of President William McKinley. He completed the last 3 years of McKinley's term. Then he was elected in his own right. Those 4 years are spoken of as Roosevelt's second term. It was during this second term that Roosevelt gained his most important foreign policy success. He negotiated an end to a war between Russia and Japan. Later, he was asked to settle another international dispute. At issue was Morocco.
In 1904, France and Britain signed an agreement on North Africa. The agreement gave Britain control over Egypt. It gave France responsibility for security and reforms in Morocco. Germany opposed the agreement. It felt threatened by any French-British alliance, and it feared France would block German trade ties with Morocco. Germany demanded an open-door policy that would permit all countries to trade freely in Morocco. It proposed an international conference to settle the dispute. France and Britain rejected the idea. The ruler of Germany, Kaiser Wilhelm II, warned that the dispute could lead to war. The Kaiser asked Theodore Roosevelt to intervene.
President Roosevelt agreed to help. Some American lawmakers criticized him. They said it was an American tradition not to get involved in European disputes. But Roosevelt believed peace was more important than tradition. He set up the conference in the Spanish seaport of Algeciras. 12 European nations and the United States attended. The conference agreed to an open-door trade policy in Morocco. It organized an international bank to control Morocco's finances. And it gave France and Spain almost complete control over police forces in Morocco's port cities.
Theodore Roosevelt had become a powerful world leader. At home, however, he was losing power. One reason was an economic depression. Business leaders blamed it on Roosevelt. They said it was the result of his efforts to gain government control over industry. The other reason was one he had created himself. At that time, there was no law limiting a president's term in office. But America's first president, George Washington, had established a tradition of only two terms. When Theodore Roosevelt won the election of 1904, he announced he would not be a candidate in 1908. He had completed the term of President McKinley. He would serve a full term of his own. That was enough. Later he said, "I would be willing to cut off my hand if I could call back that statement."
During his last year in office, Roosevelt was a lame duck president. Everyone knew he would not be back. There was little political reason to support him. He faced increased opposition from Congress and from his own Republican Party. His final message to Congress was extremely bitter. President Roosevelt accused Congress and the court system of working only to help rich Americans. He called for a tax on earnings. He called for legislation to give workers a greater share of the nation's wealth. The House of Representatives voted to reject the message. It said Roosevelt had failed to show respect for the legislative branch of government.
Roosevelt refused to give up hope for the policies he believed America needed. He would not be able to fight for these policies himself, but he could find a presidential candidate who would. He was sure the people would vote for his choice. He decided on his close friend, Secretary of War William Howard Taft. Taft had spent most of his life in government service. He had been a judge in both a state court and a federal court. He had been a lawyer in the Justice Department. And he had been governor of the Philippines.
There was one problem, however. Taft did not want to be president. He really wanted to be Chief Justice of the United States. But there were no immediate openings on the Supreme Court. Also, his wife, his brothers, and his good friend, Theodore Roosevelt, urged him to run. So Taft agreed to be a candidate for the Republican presidential nomination in 1908. When he won the nomination, Taft said, "Mr. Roosevelt led the way to reform. My job, if elected, will be to complete and perfect his programs." The Democratic Party nominated William Jennings Bryan. Bryan had been a candidate two times before without success.
The presidential campaign was not especially exciting. William Howard Taft did not like being on the campaign trail. He was a big, heavy man. He did not like to travel. Roosevelt urged him to campaign with more energy. "Hit hard, old man," Roosevelt said. Make the people see the truth. Let them know that, for all your gentleness and kindliness, there never existed a man who was a better fighter when the need arose. Roosevelt's advice and strong support helped Taft win a big victory on Election Day.
A few weeks after Taft was sworn in as president, Roosevelt left on a year-long trip overseas. He spent most of the time hunting wild animals in Africa. President Taft wrote a warm goodbye letter to his friend. He promised to do his best as president. But he admitted he could not lead as Roosevelt had done. In fact, Taft said, he was still surprised when anyone called him Mr. President. Each time it happened, he turned around to see if Roosevelt was there.
There was no question that Taft's way of leading was much different from Roosevelt's. Taft believed a president should not interfere too deeply in the actions of Congress. He also believed a president should not claim special powers or rights. He believed in the supreme power of the law, even if the law did not work very well. The progressives who had supported Roosevelt did not support Taft. They said he was too friendly with conservatives. They said he had surrendered to special interest groups. Taft, for his part, did not like progressives. He thought they were too emotional and extreme.
Yet Taft worked hard to put into law many parts of Roosevelt's progressive programs. He was successful in several areas. During his administration, for example, a separate Department of Labor was established. Two constitutional amendments won congressional approval and were sent to the states for ratification. One amendment provided for a federal tax on earnings. The other provided for direct popular election of senators. Taft also worked even harder than Roosevelt to break up companies or trusts that blocked economic competition.
At the same time, Taft failed in several areas. He signed legislation that lowered import taxes. Neither businessmen nor progressive Republicans liked it. He negotiated a free trade agreement with Canada. The Canadian Parliament rejected it. He believed in protecting America's wilderness areas. Yet, he did not believe existing laws gave him the right to close public lands to private development. So he was seen as an enemy of conservation. These struggles and failures made Taft's 4 years as president the unhappiest of his life.
The final blow came in an effort to reduce the powers of the Speaker of the House of Representatives. The Speaker was a conservative Republican. Progressive Republicans opposed him. The issue split the party. Theodore Roosevelt, far from home, read about the trouble. He had promised to stay out of politics. But each of the opposing groups in his party had asked for his support.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.